This is Monday, July 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, the Trump administration rolls out its Made in America plan. More than 7 million Venezuelans participated in an unofficial referendum organized by the opposition.
The political system's going from one that was once one of the shining examples of democracy in Latin America to an increasingly authoritarian regime that's starting to look a lot more like Cuba than, say, Costa Rica or Canada.
Also ahead, David Byrd gives us his take on the new movie Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. All of that and more on today's International Edition. The White House is dubbing this Made in America Week. A spokeswoman over the weekend said there would be a Made in America product showcase featuring products from all 50 states at the White House or outside the White House this week. VOA's White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman is joining us now from his palatial digs at the Executive Mansion in Washington, D.C. Steve, thanks for being with us. This Made in America Week doesn't arrive without any controversy. Can you bring us up to speed on that?
Well, certainly. Everyone agrees this is a noble goal. It's very much part of the president's Make America Great Again and America First campaign pledges. The reality is for some industries to try to bring production and jobs back to the United States would result in much higher prices for those products. For example, almost all the clothing and shoes that are purchased in this country, around 97%, are imported because wages are lower, and so the products can be made much more cheaply. And even the president's daughter, Ivanka Trump, makes her clothing overseas. So some people are seeing, a little bit of hypocrisy in that right within the Trump family.
Well, it goes a little even broader than that, does it not? That in the past, at least, there have been ties to the other Trump business ventures preferring overseas importation to domestic use. Is that correct or not?
Well, yeah, certainly when you talk about some of the construction projects and the labor has been immigrants, presumably many of them here illegally, but perhaps some of them working on fictitious documentation. Also, if you want to build a high-rise building, you need steel. And a lot of that steel is going to come from overseas. President Trump has threatened to put punitive tariffs on China because of steel dumping, the steel actually coming via South Korean ports. We've heard about that in recent weeks. So some of the critics of this are saying, well, fine, if you actually wanted to do all of this, then people are going to pay much more, whether it's building a high-rise building or putting on a pair of slippers.
For those people listening in the United States, you know this very well. However, for others, it seems like every domestic newscast in the United States these days is starting with the Trump situation in Russia and what has happened and what his intelligence officials say happened prior to the election and during the election. He can't get away from headlines, can he?
No, and we also saw a situation this morning where the message for this administration this week was what we were just talking about, this Made in America campaign. But the president this morning, in his first and so far only tweet of the day, tweeted, quote, "Most politicians would have gone to a meeting like the one Don Jr. attended in order to get info on an opponent. That's politics," which is way off message from what his handlers in the White House want him to be speaking about. And this just further exacerbates this controversy about the meeting that his son had with someone he believed to be a government-connected Russian lawyer to present him with dirt on Hillary Clinton, the opponent of Donald Trump in the general election last year.
You're at the White House every day. What's the mentality there? What's the feeling there? It's been described in reports as being almost a bunker mentality.
Well, I think there's a tremendous amount of fatigue, actually, both physical and mental. people here, whether they're reporters or those working in the press office, put in very long hours. And unlike previous administrations, you can have several major stories erupt every day. And that takes its toll on people. And when there are attempts to try to focus on policy issues, for example, health care being a huge one, tax reform another, a lot of that gets deferred or deflected because of just this drip, drip, drip of revelations coming out every day about the Russia investigation. And for a long time, it was all fake news, quote unquote, according to the White House. But when you have the son of the president revealing his emails and blatantly spelling out what happened on social media, then that fake news argument tends not to work anymore, because these aren't coming from sources. They're very direct and authenticated messages coming from a presidential family member.
Steve Herman is VOA's White House Bureau Chief. As always, Steve, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Ira.
And we continue now with Andrew Palczewski as we take a look at what's happening in social media. Another story domestically here in the United States deals with a Republican attempt to get rid of the Obama health care plan, Obamacare, and substitute it with a Republican plan. And that's trending. That's doing something, right?
It is, and it's trending because of the health care of one member of Congress in particular. That's Senator John McCain, who is currently out recovering from surgery to remove a blood clot, releasing a statement online about the surgery, and he tweeted out and said thanks to the Mayo Clinic for its excellent care. But with McCain being out, the tenuousness of this health care bill, they need every vote they can get, and so they've had to delay this because of Senator McCain's absence while he recovers from this brain surgery.
And they're not even sure that he's a yes vote on this.
And he's an undecided vote.
Right.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
So it speaks to, like I said, the tenuousness of this. Lots of people also, to dovetail on what Steve was just talking about, this Made in America week that's been announced by President Trump, lots of people across the political spectrum wondering on social media, why isn't the White House making this healthcare week? Why aren't they focusing more on healthcare? Why are they trying to do other things? Some wondering if there's already a sense of defeat over healthcare, or if they're trying to just forestall this vote and trying to focus on other things while they can before they go back to healthcare. Other people noting that every week has been healthcare week in recent weeks because of this bill and the debate. So lots of intrigue and political chess, as we say, on social media as the pieces move around, including, as we said, the healthcare of one of those members who could help to pass or defeat this bill.
Now, one of Andrew's favorite things in life is an emoji, and he is very, very happy today, walking around in a full smile, because this is...
It is World Emoji Day.
All over the world.
All over the world, celebrating...
Even in Antarctica and the polar regions and middle of deserts and things like that.
There's a penguin emoji, yeah, sure. Absolutely. Today is World Emoji Day, celebrating the 2,666 icons that we use in our online conversations, and not just the smiley face. Faces that I know that you're very fond of using, I'm sure.
Oh, certainly.
Lots of others, including Apple releasing 50 new emojis today, including emoji that's vomiting, but also some other ones, some emojis of people doing yoga poses, and some serious ones too, an emoji of a woman wearing a headscarf, which they say is being more inclusive, so celebrating that. But there is a serious tinge to this. Researchers have said that emojis can help provide insight into human behavior in the digital age and how we communicate, and one researcher even says that it can help children improve their language skills by using emojis. So some good stuff. And I talk about that in my hashtag VOA Digital Daily that people can find online, twitter.com/#VOA and facebook.com/#VOA.
You got it in, didn't you?
I got to get it in, absolutely.
Andrew Palczewski, may the emoji be with you. Among the top stories in the world, U.S. President Donald Trump continues to defend his eldest son's meeting last year with a Russian lawyer he expected was going to hand him incriminating material about Trump's election challenger. South Korea on Monday proposed holding military talks with North Korea aimed at reducing tensions along their border. Afghan security forces backed by U.S. military advisors and air power have evicted insurgents from a strategically important southern district. and more than 7 million Venezuelans participate in an unofficial referendum organized by the opposition on Sunday. Expanded coverage of these and more on all of our social media and platforms and voanews.com. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
If you're in pain and need some relief, researchers at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center and Boston Children's Hospital propose that instead of reaching for a pain pill, you just may need more sleep. The researchers, who detailed their findings in the journal Nature Medicine, also suggest that in the absence of adequate sleep, improved alertness through caffeine use, for example, could also help make you feel better. In their experiments on mice, the scientists gauged the effects of sleep loss on how sensitive the animals were to both painful and non-painful stimulation. After testing usual pain blockers like ibuprofen and then stimulant agents like caffeine, the researchers say they were able to find out how alertness played a role in lowering the sensitivity of the mice to pain. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
That'll show you. Be alert at all times. Election monitors in Venezuela say more than 7 million voters cast their ballot Sunday in an opposition-run unofficial referendum aimed at pressuring President Nicolas Maduro to abandon his plan to rewrite his country's constitution.
Lo que debería pasar en las próximas horas después de lo que ha sido...
Opposition leader Enrique Capriles said after an overwhelmingly peaceful, democratic, and constitutional expression by the Venezuelan people, the government's planned July 30th vote to create a new constituent assembly should be canceled. The South American country, reeling under an economic, social, and political crisis, has seen almost daily, sometimes violent, anti-government protests aimed at ending two decades of socialist rule. Rice University Latin American analyst Mark Jones said the ruling socialists, known as Chavinistas, are taking the name from the late socialist leader Hugo Chavez, who are trying to extend their rule.
If the Constituent Assembly is held, the Constitution will be rewritten in such a way that it will lock Chavistas into power forever, or at least as long as they can hold power.
The country has been undergoing almost daily protests. Some 100 or so have been killed as the country's political, social, and economic crisis deepened. What's going on?
Venezuela is a very tragic case. It stands out over the last 50 years as one of the sharpest drops in standards of living in a country that hasn't experienced civil war or some type of other military conflict, where we've seen the standard of living drop dramatically. People are having a hard time getting access to food and basic health care. And the political system's going from one that was once one of the shining examples of democracy in Latin America to an increasingly authoritarian regime that's starting to look a lot more like Cuba than, say, Costa Rica or Canada.
Can any outside organization like the OAS, the Organization of American States, or the U.S. do anything about this?
It's very difficult because the United States is seen, not without some reason, by the Chavista government of Nicolas Maduro as being pro-opposition and thus not being a neutral actor. The OAS has become, I think, compromised as well and is rather weak. And unless countries like Brazil, which is beset by its own internal problems, as well as others such as Argentina and Chile and Mexico, really make an active effort to promote dialogue, I think we're unlikely to see any international forces bring reconciliation in Venezuela. I think that's in part due to the fact that the Maduro government and some of the hardline Chavistas don't want any reconciliation. And that's really bedeviled the opposition over the past 3 to 5 years, where they've tried to work within the democratic system to effect change. And what they've increasingly realized is that they're never going to be able to actually negotiate, come to some type of consensual agreement with Nicolas Maduro and hardline Chavistas, because they aren't willing to make any compromise whatsoever.
Mark Jones said that is what led to Sunday's unofficial vote. He said the opposition realizes it must engage more in acts of civil disobedience, so Mr. Maduro is unable to hold his vote and also win international backing for democratic change. This is VOA.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth discussion on African elections. What makes a ballot credible? Some political observers say African elections are often merely selections. We'll tackle the difference on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
We continue on International Edition from VOA. A report in the Washington Post says the United Arab Emirates orchestrated the hacking of a Qatari government news site in May, planning a false story that was used as a pretext for the current crisis between Qatar and several Arab countries. The Emirati Embassy in Washington released a statement in response, calling the Post report false and insisting that the UAE had no role whatsoever in the alleged hacking. The report quotes unnamed U.S. intelligence officials as saying that senior members of the Emirati government discussed the plan on May 23rd. On the following day, a story appeared on the Qatari news agency's website, quoting a speech by Qatar's emir, Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani, in which he allegedly praised Iran and said Qatar has a good relationship with Israel. Similarly, incendiary statements appeared on the news agency's Twitter feed. The agency quickly claimed it was hacked and removed the article. However, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Bahrain, and Egypt all blocked Qatari media and later severed diplomatic ties. The ongoing crisis has threatened to complicate the U.S.-led coalition's fight against Islamic State group, as all participants are U.S. allies and members of the anti-IS coalition. South Korea Monday proposed holding military talks with North Korea aimed at reducing tensions along their border. South Korea's defense ministry said it was wants to hold a meeting Friday at the border truce village of Panmunjom. There was no immediate response from North Korea. If the talks do take place, they would represent the first inter-Korea dialogue since December of 2015. There's a new film coming out from French director Luc Besson. It's called Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. It opens later this month. As VOA's David Byrd explains, the futuristic sci-fi film marries overwhelming visuals and strong acting from its female lead to transport viewers into a distant galaxy.
It's the 28th century, and Major Valerian, played by Dane DeHaan, and Laureline, his partner, played by Cara Delevingne, are special operatives hoping to save the city Alpha from a mysterious dark force that aims to destroy it and the universe. Alpha is a city made up of a thousand planets where alien species and humans have all learned to work together for everyone's benefit.
Welcome to Alpha. The city of a thousand planets, where for hundreds of years every species has shared their knowledge and their intelligence with each other. It's paradise.
The film is based on a 1967 French comic series, Valerian and Laureline, which a young Luc Besson devoured as a child. Besson, who directed 2014's Lucy and another futuristic space opera, The Fifth Element, said he had to quiet his younger self to direct this movie.
Even if this tribe bring you there, now it's a new deal. You're not 10 years old anymore. you have experience in life. You have to reorganize your way of thinking and your way of working. So I just hope that this little 10 years old boy is just proud of the film.
Dane DeHaan says that he shared Besson's enthusiasm for the story and was amazed to get the part of Major Valerian.
We were eating some eggs, and he was like, "Hey, I'm making the movie I've wanted to make my entire life, and I want you to star in it." And it was so It was so overwhelming and kind of like surreal. I didn't even really understand what was happening. And he sent me the script 2 hours later, and I read it, and I called him, and I was like, I love this. And I remember him saying like, oh, I'm so happy, I'm so happy.
British fashion model Cara Delevingne says that working with Besson was both overwhelming and amazing as an actor.
It's completely overwhelming, but at the same time, when you're working with Luc, who's wanted to do this project since he was a kid, he knows every character, every situation, every environment so well that when he describes it, it's almost like you're there. So he was like the best tour guide of, you know, Alpha and the universe as anyone could have.
Besson says that his exhaustive knowledge of the storylines helped him take the actors to places that they could only imagine because the environments were inserted later in post-production.
It's more like the actors goes for a journey to the unknown, and I am Google Earth. So they can refer to me, should I take right or should I take left?
You should take left.
You know, I'm just like, it's not, I'm the reference in a way. I am like, they want to write a letter and I am the dictionary.
Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets also stars Clive Owen as General Aaron Fillet, Valerian and Laureline's commanding officer. Musician Herbie Hancock stars as Alpha's defense minister, while singer Rihanna plays Bubble, a shape-shifting, exotic entertainer. And John Goodman lends his voice to Egon Cyrus, a Jabba the Hutt kind of intergalactic gangster. Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets is rated PG-13 for sci-fi violence and action, and suggestive material with some brief language. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
And finally this story. Garth Brooks, the singer, says he's going to pony up for a Hawaiian honeymoon for a couple who got engaged at his concert in Oklahoma City. Drew Bardsley proposed to Chelsea Townsend while Brooks was playing his hit Unanswered Prayer Saturday night. The singer got wind of the commotion, said he is going to pay for it. You've been listening to International Edition.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The UN Secretary General recently released his biannual report on implementation of UN Security Council Resolution 2231. In it, he confirmed that all parties, including Iran, are living up to their commitments under the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the nuclear deal agreed to by Iran, the EU, and the P5+1 countries. But when UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs Jeffrey Feltman presented the report to the Security Council, he focused on the resolution's other provisions as well, one of which calls on Iran to refrain from activity related to ballistic missile development. He noted that on January 29, 2017, Iran launched a medium-range ballistic missile, and that had followed a series of earlier ballistic missiles launched by Iran in March 2016. The sanctions outlined in Resolution 2231 also restrict Iran's arms transfer and export. UN Undersecretary Feltman reported that after analysis of a cache of weapons seized by the French Navy in the northern Indian Ocean in March 2016, it was determined that the weapons were of Iranian origin and had been shipped from Iran. In addition, Mr. Feltman noted that Iran's Defense Ministry organization again participated in Iraq's defense exhibition. U.S. Ambassador to the UN Nikki Haley said the Secretary General's report is filled with devastating evidence of the nature of the Iranian regime and documents the Iranian government's actions in defiance of Resolution 2231.
Repeated ballistic missile launches, proven arms smuggling, illicit procurement of ballistic missile-related technology.
She also observed that while Resolution 2231 requires states to prohibit the entry into their territory of certain individuals, like Major General Qasem Soleimani, chief of the IRGC's Quds Force, he has openly visited other countries.
We as the Security Council must stand behind the provisions of 2231. We must strictly enforce them and show Iran that we will not tolerate their egregious flaunting of UN resolutions.
The United States will do its part to implement Resolution 2231. It will also work with global partners to interdict prohibited cargo and continue to impose U.S. domestic sanctions on those who help Iran violate Resolution 2231. Iran's behavior and rhetoric are not those of a responsible member of the international community, said Ambassador Haley. The Security Council must recognize this fact and act accordingly.
That was an editorial reflecting